All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. Warm my voice just a little bit there. Blackbird, shame on you. You should know better than that. We're doing Skype right now, so you're blaring through the commercials. Anyways, we're sharing here. We got Blackbird 9 on the line coming from North Kakalaki, as he used to call it. And Blackbird, first welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for coming on.
Greetings. Happy Saturday. Happy Defy the Laws of Thermodynamics Week. And a most curious Rosh Hashanah season. My apologies for my faux pas. I thought we were doing a sound check before we went live. My bad. Used to play with those RBN producers. They always want a sound check before they plug me into the board. But I hope I'm coming through okay.
You're coming through great. Fetch does his own production work, and generally speaking, there's screw-ups, but we do a pretty good job over the years.
I think you do a great job. Yeah, this is my mobile emergency rig that I'm on, my mobile emergency rig tablet, and basically I'm outside so I can get one bar of a 5G signal that's been up. This is how I've been able to stay in communication for a long time. I was one of the only people in the county that had an internet connection.
Yeah, that's difficult when everything's connected nowadays. I guess the 5-9 circuits are all down, huh?
Well, ours is. Our POTS line, the entire phone line, there were so many mudslides on the road leading up to Blackjack Mountain that the poles came down, trees came down on the power lines. There's still sections where you have to drive across live power lines to get out for emergency access. That side of the mountain got hit really hard. Fortunately, here on Blackjack Mountain proper, we managed to get through with just some white knuckle weather hunkering down and some soggy basements. But we finally were able to get all our crew accounted for and stabilized across the various counties and able to get out and help other people. But, you know, we did okay. But, you know, like I said, we were without power. We got power back Sunday night. We lost power about Friday, 6:30 in the morning when they brought the grid down. We got it back Sunday night around 4:30. But there's no telling when we will get either cable TV, cable internet, or the old POTS line back online. They're saying weeks out.
Wow. Now, this started, I guess, a week ago, something like that. It started, I think, even before my show last Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. So I think you guys are at least a week into this now, disaster. You know, obviously, we're well on the recovery side. Even the search and rescue is, I guess, in some areas becoming much worse than that. But can you fill us in, I guess, and the listeners, I guess, what it was like? This was, some say, a geoengineered. You know, the conspiracies are going to be out there everywhere, and that's fine. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I can't go definitive on here because I don't have any proof. But you know what I mean? So all these words are out there. What was this storm like for North Carolina in your history as you've been there probably all your life?
Right. Well, that's one thing, you know, this old man, Heritage Appalachia, and I have gone through many hurricanes growing up in the shadow of Hazel, the one before my time that set the benchmark in these mountains as the worst hurricane to hit North Carolina. But I personally went through Hurricane Fran in Raleigh in the 90s, Hurricane Floyd in Wilmington. After 9/11, and then Andrew, of course, and then was doing basically remote support for my niece and her children during Hurricane Katrina as we were trying to get them out of New Orleans to higher ground in Eunice, where my sister lived at the time. So, you know, I'm pretty good with hurricane, how the behavior is over the years. Also, living up here on Blackjack Mountain in the Appalachian Mountains, we're in a very unique weather pattern in that we're one side of our mountain goes into we're on the, what's called the Eastern Continental Divide. One side, all the water flows down into the Gulf of Mexico. The other side, everything flows into the Atlantic. And because of that, we have a very unique weather system here in these mountains. And we've had, you know, Otma and I over the years, almost 20 years now, have weather, you know, hurricanes, blizzards, you name it. and you see patterns of how they should behave. And the thing that, you know, Helene or Helena, depending on who you talk to, the rate it came up through the Bible Belt and just wiped out all those red rural counties, it was just, you know, moved so quickly and continued to gain strength unlike any other hurricanes. Usually when hurricanes come ashore, they start dissipating quickly because all the thermodynamics, the Bernoulli effects, you know, completely change. They start damping out. This one kept getting stronger, and we got a tornado warning at 10:30 p.m. Thursday night. It came across in Spanish first from FEMA, and then we got the English version. But basically, on the other side of our mountain, just a stone throw over to Blowing Rock, a tornado had touched down and was headed our way. Fortunately, it dissipated before it got to us, but it was making a beeline for us. And tornadoes in this area never happen. It's just not part of our history. Same thing with this type of flooding, where you're looking at, you know, going back as far as the records go, this area has never flooded to the degree it flooded during this event. And so Thursday night, the rain just continued to build, the winds continued to build. 6:30 Friday morning, our power grid went out. And then our Babbling Brook became white water, and fortunately our levees held. One, the water actually went over the levee. It was like 2 feet of water over a levee that has a 4-foot culvert in it. So you can imagine how much water was going through that it couldn't keep up with 4-foot culvert. So it was going over that, and that continued throughout all of Saturday. And then, you know, Saturday things started breaking up a little bit, and just that's when the reports of the damage started coming in. I was fortunate that my cell phone, all the other phones here were out. We were cut off with the exception of my cell phone. I was able to get out, and also my tablet over a 5G tower that managed to stay up. And so for most of the weekend, I think I had one of the few internet connections, phone connections in this area. And so I was able to coordinate between things I was hearing on the ham radio feeds and the CB radio feeds and posting them online while coordinating, you know, basically search and rescue for my crew and our carers. Because for the people who don't know about the Trading Post, we do a lot of elder care work, a lot of special needs care work. And so we were having to track down all those people, find out, you know, their sit rep and figure out how we were going to get to them, et cetera. And so that was basically, you know, my, you know, white knuckle weekend. And since then, it's just been more, you know, stabilizing the situations, orienting people. It's like, where do we go from here? And then navigating how we're going to get through this. And setting up, you know, supply lines, et cetera, while coordinating with people that are in the really hard hit areas over there in like Asheville, Transylvania County, you know, Mitchell, you know, those areas that were just completely devastated. You've got towns that no longer exist. The entire towns were washed away. You've got sections of the interstate, those massive interstate things that are gone. But go ahead.
I just, so with all these towns literally wiped off the map, I mean, I can only imagine. We got to go back to talking about Jews, dude. And it's like Jews always tell us about how they're going to be wiped off the map. But where are Jews now to help the Americans when we get kind of wiped off the map?
Well, you know, it's very nice to know that FEMA provided over $300 million for synagogue security, in addition to all the millions that they were paying room and board and cell phones and debit cards to all these illegal invader replacement populations that are now in roving, looting, robbing gangs or in these mountain counties, I might add. And so, you know, $300 million for synagogue security. So that really gives me a warm fuzzy when I'm told by Mayorkas that there's no money left in FEMA and we're basically on our own. But if you try to do it on your own, FEMA is going to come in and pull rank and say, you can't do that, and we're going to confiscate what you have. You know, we'll handle distribute it, which means they're going to put it in a warehouse somewhere, and it'll never see the light of day again.
Yeah, we talked about that. I think you heard that, where if you're not on the approved list, FEMA just won't distribute it. You know, you're just not on the approved list. So it just sits there, the donations even.
Yeah, one of the most infuriating things was the PR piece that FEMA put out with this angry black woman diversity hire explaining to we white trash rednecks of southern Appalachia that all we need to do is fill out a form, and that form can be either accessed by phone or by the internet. So we've got entire power grids that no longer exist, substations that no longer exist. You know, it's going to be forever before these people get internet access again. And you're telling them all they have to do is call in or fill out a form, and FEMA will be glad to help you. And it's how pull is that? You know, it's like, well, we offered to help, but we didn't hear from anybody, so we figured they were fine. That's the insanity of FEMA.
Now, the water flows I saw, the mud flows, pretty amazing. How did we get that much water so fast? And what was the measurable rainfall on this thing?
I'm getting reports of anywhere from 9 to 23 inches. And my experience up here on Blackjack for these mountain valleys is 3 inches is the magic number. That's when things change as far as your water runoff patterns. That you better have clean gutters and clean culverts if it's 3 inches of rain or more, or you will get flooding, you will get washing. So that got magnified from 3 to 9, you know, of this is how much rain happened in a 24-hour period. So it's just like I said, catastrophic rainfall, unprecedented. And suddenly people are saying, hey, ever heard of Operation Popeye? Is what we did in the Vietnam War to extend and amplify the monsoon season, to use the weather as a weapon against the farmers, to basically cause widespread famine, you know, like we did in the Holodomor. And so it's interesting, all the reports of all the chemtrails patterns over this region in the run-up to this hurricane. And then you find out that there was this bona fide thing called Operation Popeye, designed to just do that. Take a normal storm, seed it, amplify it with microwave laser technology to heat up the particulates to cause those Bernoulli effects, and have, you know, to change the physics of the clouds. And you're basically doing a storm amplifying system, right? And you can also use that technology to diminish it, but they never do that. The original project was, you know, to be able to stop these bad storms, but instead they amplify it. And that's what Operation Papua was about.
You know where they do diminish it? They diminish it over places like Memphis, where you have major distribution hubs. They will diminish it. It's like, you won't get any rainfall in Memphis. It's like that airport never gets rainfall. They're like protecting the airport. So they actually do diminish it, from what I understand. People say it's really weird, man. We just don't get rain over Memphis when it's peak season. It just doesn't happen.
Right. You know, so that is the technology of this type of weather manipulation. Is basic, moisture, pressure, volume, temperature, those basics of those PVT thermodynamic graphs. And when you've got things like microwave laser technology and, you know, cloud seeding technology or chemtrail technology, you know, this is just basic science. This is just like, you know, how do we kill people another way? And this is 5G warfare. Anything that can be weaponized has been weaponized.
What were the main targets of this storm? Population, demographically.
Well, you know, when you look at the demographic coming up through Florida, through Georgia, through South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, that is Heritage Appalachia. That is the remnants of the Confederacy. These were the Celts, Scot-Irish. You know, you had the English come first, but then the Scot-Irish come into these mountains and basically tame a wilderness driven by this idea of independence, independent living and self-sufficiency, minimal to no government authority over them. So you got a very hardy stock through here that basically is the poster child for Amalek in this, you know, Zionist globo homo worldview of theirs, that we are the poster child of the humans that are going to stand in the way of their agenda, just like the Cossacks were in Russia, just like the Ukrainians were during the Holodomor, just like the Germans were during World War II. Why did Germany have to be destroyed? They could never be brought under the Jewish yoke of Marxism. And it's like, we will demand, you know, we don't want that system. You know, here in the South, you know, it's very rapid anti, you know, globo homo, anti-UN, very much family faith nation, right? And that is what they have to destroy according to the Clergy plans and the Cloward Piven plans. And so you just see that this just happens to, you know, fill in their objective of, we're going to wipe out that heritage stock and then replace it with the third world. And those people will be easily controlled in our, you know, new electronic banking system with social credit scores, et cetera. Yeah, this is what they're wanting. They want us gone. And I'm against it. So,
yeah, we've been against it so long time. So it's mainly hitting traditional, that I guess you're calling it the last stock of the Confederacy is what you're saying.
Yes.
These operations do cost money. It does cost money. So therefore, there must be a profit motive somewhere on the other side. Any truth to the lithium battery mine story?
That is a very interesting story. Yes, that checks out. There are huge mineral deposits, both quartz crystal and lithium, around the area of Asheville. And you had all these, you know, Jewish-controlled big mining outfits because, you know, one of the things, hate facts, Jews control most of the mining interests, either directly or indirectly, in the world, and they have for a very long time. They loved using slaves to get their stuff out of the ground, right? And so the Jews have long controlled that, just like they've long controlled the alcohol industry. And they came in and started doing basically a Delphi program on the locals, just like they did to get Walmarts in all these southern towns, et cetera, where they go in, buy up the local government and approve all these changes before the people even know what's going on. Well, up there, people push back and were able to organize to stop it. Now that area has been completely decimated. So what's going to happen to that land now? Are they going to now proceed with those mining operations? The other thing is these commie carpetbagger philanthropists in these so-called nature conservancy organizations that go in and buy up distressed property and put it into these UN Agenda 21 land covenants that said basically we're going to conserve the land by getting all those white people off of it. And the targets there are all these heritage Appalachian self-sufficiency farms, independent little farms that have been in these families for generations since colonial times. These outfits are Jewish controlled. And especially the and also Rockefellers. We got, there's a Rockefeller demon spawn of J.D. Rockefeller branch that has invaded here with all their ill-gotten gains, and their outfit is called Blue Ridge Conservancy, and they're the ones that basically destroyed our business here at the trading post that we spent 10 years building this business up. They basically came in through their land deals and put us under siege where we can't, basically, you know, shutting us down and, you know, splitting this family up that had owned this mountain valley back to colonial times. And these people are ruthless in their tactics. And so they just are targeting all these distressed properties to put them in these land covenants. And everybody says, oh, conservation's good. It'll preserve the views. Meanwhile, you are doing genocide. And there's nothing more insufferable than a bunch of, you know, silver spoon trust fund babies with a noble cause and an NGO. You know, they are as bad as the synagogues up here. You know, it's just, you know, they are working against you 24/7 in the shadows. You don't see what they are doing up here, but they are, you know, waging war. But it's fourth, fifth generation warfare against Heritage Appalachia.
So people should follow, I guess, the two stories in weather manipulation and really start opening up more of what you're talking about, which is the NGOs and the base. It's theft of the land. I mean, it's exactly. Engineering the theft of the land by destroying the property values and then picking up for literally pennies on the dollar and not allowing the land to be productive. So people have to sell. It's just,
exactly.
It's just
as criminal, but legal. You know, it's amazing how much legalese is going on up here with this operation.
It's morally reprehensible, which makes it's just morally reprehensible, which makes it almost an act of war by these people against the innocent people that really don't get it.
Yeah, but they're so arrogant. The hubris and the chutzpah of these people is they really feel that they are tikkun olamim. They are fixing the world. And all these local, you know, heritage people, they're just backwards rednecks that just need to die off, you know, because their kind's not needed anymore in their great cosmopolitan, globo-homo worldview, you know. And that's what we're up against. But, you know, and the media here, you know, after 9/11, Adams Publishing, you know, Echo, came into this area, Appalachia, bought up all the failing family-owned newspapers, local newspapers. Same time, Curtis Media, Echo, came in and bought up all the distressed failing radio stations. And they basically are operating them at a deficit because there's no way they are making money off of this legacy media up here, but it's been weaponized into propaganda. And so basically all the so-called local news is being filtered by this Jewish editorial staff of what you can and can't say. Fun fact, I'm banned from commenting on both, you know, and I'm banned from every single Adams Publishing publication outfit. They have banned me across the board for my hate facts because I see what they're doing. You know, and the other thing is just an echo chamber for the university.
Yeah, and being an FCC thing, they should have to give you equal airtime. I mean, by law.
Oh, Bill Clinton fixed that. You know, old tricky Bill. You know, Slick Willie, you know, his Telecommunication Act of 1996, which you're very familiar with, changed all that. You know, we don't have to have fairness doctrine anymore. You don't have to give equal time. Everything's community standards and terms of service. You know, and I violate my hate facts violate their community, echo, communitarian terms of service.
I had Kevin McDonald on the day after I think Trump was nominated, 2016. And one of the things we talked about, I brought it up for sure, was, you know, we have to get control of the FCC. It may seem like something that seems innocuous or something, but we have to get control of the FCC because without getting control of our media back, it's such a long roll doing podcasts. You know, we reach what we reach and we have force multipliers of our own. Hell, I've even seen something this past week where, you know, the term every single time to mean Jews, something like that was read out in the Australian Congress. You know, why is it that these Jews are working so hard to destroy our land here every single time? So you can see our Overton window has shifted. But just imagine how fast we can make that shift if we could just get more access to our own public airwaves. We just don't have access to our own scarce resources, be it internet, which is a scarce resource. Airwaves, we don't have access to the scarce resources. And those belong to the people of the United States.
Exactly. But the FCC has been weaponized. And, of course, there's a chicken swinger in charge of the FCC now. And The other aspect of this is ham radio. The ham tip of the hat to all the ham radio operators, and definitely tip of the hat to all the, excuse my language, badass white guys, Heritage Appalachia line guys who have been out there in Armageddon trying to get power up for all the people of this area. You guys rock. I couldn't keep up with you. But the ham operators are reporting that, you know, in an emergency, according to the old way of doing things, anybody can operate a ham radio without a license. If it is, you know, life-threatening situation, which this is, you know, all airways become available. Oh, we got the music.
We do. You want to stay tuned? Run.
Oh, sure, if you want to.
All right, stay tuned. It's a pitch, everybody. For 9 coming out of Carolina, North Carolina, back after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. We've temporarily lost Blackbird. It was a technical issue on this side. So, BB, Frederick, hang in there just one second. I'm trying to bring you back here.
I should be in.
Oh, you are. There you are. Oh, awesome. Yes. I thought you were out.
Yeah, I got bumped somehow, but I'm back.
You did get back. Yeah, I see that we're all here. It looks like we're all here. Yeah, we are all here. Okay, great. You got bumped. But you're back. Okay, great. All right, before we get into the next little segment here, I want to play a clip for you and then go over a few issues and then get your comments, because you and I have been fighting this scourge called Jewish genius and logic for longer than a lot of people out there. And in this clip, it's just, why do people hate the Jews? I was playing it just before you came on. And then we want to go over some of the events coming out of North Carolina that points directly at Jews. And here's kind of why we don't like you guys, because it's much worse than just some simple naivete about Christianity. So let me just pull the clip up one more time here. Why do people hate the Jews? And let's get this thing to play. We're already halfway through the clip.
Right. I would add to that, I think that is one of the reasons that a lot of people think that Jews killed Jesus. Two, chosen people strikes a lot of people wrong. Just like, oh, you think you're chosen? Well, we'll see about that. And three, successful. Very successful. Right?
Don't look at me. I didn't like it.
No, but why do you think that there's anti-Semitism to the degree now? Okay, but what about the young people now? What about this weird alliance between wokeism and jihadism
I'd also add, you've got like this many Jews on TikTok, which is the most important mechanism to transmit information among young people today. And you've got a vastly larger Muslim population. The algorithms are driving the hate, as Yuval suggested. That's actually a big component of why it's growing right now.
So the answer is get more Jews on TikTok.
Yeah, can you imagine? That's HBO. You turn on something, you're expecting to be something kind of comedic, and it's just four Jews, and one of that woman is hideous. I swear she is hideous. You want to talk about a prototype Jewish woman? She's hideous. But they just want to talk about, you know, themselves. Why do people hate the Jews? And then they come up with all this simpleton stuff. Now, you look at what's going on now in North Carolina. For instance, you have this situation. BlackRock just signed a $90 million contract for lithium in the exact town that was hardest hit by the hurricane. You add to that you have Esther Mannheimer, who is now the Jewish mayor of that town. And then they brag about how successful they are. Then you add in the fact that they do control so many elements of our government, including FEMA, including Mayorkas with the Department of Homeland Security. And all of a sudden, this really looks like a Jewish plot to take over a very wealthy part of the United States for themselves. And they're acting like, why do people hate Jews? It's because of things like this that just make you stop and go, are you successful or are you murdering American people because you have an inside track? And you consider that, quote unquote, successful. But it's not a success that we consider success. We find it criminal. What do you think?
Oh, where to start on cave troll chicken swingers? It is that chutzpah of, you know, we never, ever do anything wrong. And this idea of, you know, the vampire can't cast a reflection. These people have no self-reflection at all. And this is where you get into race realism and genetics, that these people are not white European stock. They are a different genetic line that has very different genetic markers that, you know, go back to Neanderthal heritage rather than Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien heritage, right? And that it is beyond that. You can't shame the devil. They're never going to have any accountability because everything they do, they project onto others. This is the whole point of the chicken swinging ritual Kalparot that they do, you know, during Yom Kippur. You know, it's just, and which is coming up. It's like basically take everything we've done wrong, and we all know we did things wrong, but we just project it, and then we deny it ever happened. And then the nepotism of, you can't have two white guys go fishing up here anymore unless it's a hate crime, right? And the idea of driving the hate, any attempt of holding Jews accountable for what they're doing is hate and hateful and it's anti-Semitic. You can't do that. And that casting those shame spells of, you know, either shaming and guilt tripping you or, you know, shutting you down. And, you know, Mayorkas was out there this week talking about, you know, why hasn't FEMA done this, and why is this going on at the border? Meanwhile, the synagogues are getting this much money, these invaders are getting this much money. And he leads with, well, I find your questions insulting because as a son of a Holocaust survivor, you know, and suddenly that is the magic, you know, spell that, you know, just, oh, well, the Holocaust denier, we didn't know. Of course you can do anything you want. You know, here, destroy our town, destroy our way of life, destroy our religion, you know, mock everything we hold sacred. And the other aspect of this is that, you know, coming in with their ill-gotten gains, you know, 1913, allowing that shadow cabal of, you know, Zabatean Frankist Jews with this globo homo endgame of white genocide to take over the money supply of the United States, the biggest republic this side of the Roman Empire, and suddenly they're in control of the purse. And of course, all the money is going to go to Jewish interests. That's nepotism. Fun fact, under the Talmud, Jews don't charge each other interest. They charge the goyim interest, usury, right?
Yeah, so just to follow on to what you just said, $24.4 billion this past year cleared, free and clear to Ukraine, 100% a Jewish project, $11.3 billion to Israel. I think that's Peruvian, but some people tell me that's a purely Jewish project. $1.95 going out to Ethiopia. Okay, I don't know why. I think because they had a lot of Ethiopian Jews back in the day, right? $1.6 million to Jordan. Why? Because of the peace treaty with the United with Israel. $1.4 million to Egypt. Same thing. Why we're sending $1.1 billion to Afghanistan, who knows? $1.1 million to Somalia, who knows? Probably resources, like you said, the mining operations. $1 million to Yemen, who knows, right? $987 is going probably to secure the gold mines in Congo. Why are we spending $896 for the military in Syria? And you know what? $9,000 for every illegal immigrant, which is basically being brought in by some 650 some odd Jewish NGOs, $9,000 per immigrant entering the United States. And then American is going to, you know, you guys over there are being offered $750 if you can fill in the proper forms.
Exactly. And yeah, that is the thing of this type of psychological warfare. Goes back to the Solomon Ash group conformed experiments and the Milgram experiments on authority and the Jane Elliott blue eyes, brown eyes experiments, as well as the Philip Zimbardo Stanford prison experiments. You know, how to manipulate the goyim with our Marxist communist authority. We're royal Jews. We have the moral authority, intellectual authority on everything because of the Holocaust, right? So this is threat, and we control the money. You know, it is our money system. If you play with us, we will reward you. If you try to stand up to us, we will destroy you. And that idea of this, you know, carpetbagger Jews with bagfuls of money and a bunch of NGO groups of gullible, you know, useful idiots, especially around university towns, all these, you know, idealistic students that have been radicalized by their Jewish professors and their diversity hire professors into spending their time promoting these NGOs against the local populations. This is warfare. And yeah, this is how they operate, just like in the protocols. Our gold, our capital, is how we will undermine, you know, the goyim. And you know, here you had the Schaefer Kikedykes, best friends with Gloria Steinem, CIA Mossad asset, founder of Ms. Magazine, come in and basically buy up this town. And the other is Leon Levine of the the Schaefer Kikedykes are spending daddy's money. Daddy was a mall merchant who got his billions with the Claire stores in the U.S. European malls, which is basically just Chinese made trash for teenage girls. And then the Leon Levine Foundation. And Leo Levine is the family dollar merchant who is notorious for abusing workers, selling bad product, and basically price gouging, running the local businesses, mom and pop Christian businesses, out of business, and then jacking up the prices. Yeah, they've been taken to court so many times. Suddenly, they're philanthropists, and they're coming in to Tikkun Olam, the high country. And they have the Jewish press, both radio, television, newspaper, all the periodicals up here are Jewish controlled, and just sit there and do one fluff piece after another of all this great work these philanthropists are doing. And it's like, this is not philanthropy. This is philanthropathy. This is, psychotic, destruction in the name of good works. And this is how they justify this. Because of the Holocaust, we're free to come in and destroy the old system so we can replace it with the new system. And everybody's got to be diverse. We got to be inclusivity. And you can't have any more white guys in positions of power. And they brag about how they moved into this area after 9/11 and took out the, quote, good old boy network in the county, in the town of Boone, and at Appalachian State University, a taxpayer-funded university, and weaponized all of it against the heritage stock. And you just had this nonstop psychological warfare going in this county. And if you point it out, the locals are mostly so brainwashed that, you can't say that because of the Holocaust, that you can't be anti-Semitic, you can't be racist, you can't be sexist, you have to be LGBT tolerant. What's wrong with you? And it's like, well, I guess I'm just against white genocide. Color me weird that way, So back to you.
Yeah. Why do you think so? There's no red pilling going on with this event at all?
Oh, there's a lot of red pilling going on with this event. People, this, is going to be a sharp rock through the Overton window for a lot of people as they experience how this Jewish-controlled FEMA is not only not helping, but are thwarting their efforts to make their lives even more miserable than they already are. And so I think a lot of people are going to be taking off the Anne Frank goggles after this event and say, enough is enough. Y'all just need to get, you can take the high road or you can take the low road, but y'all just need to get, and we're going to take care of our own up here. And I think that's where a lot of people are. And here, basically, you had the badass local white guys out doing all the heavy lifting, all the good-hearted local white folks trying to provide aid for everyone. The Indians and the Muslims were price gouging at all the convenience stores, gas stations, and independent motels they have acquired in the last 10 years up here. The Blacks, Mexicans, and Antifa are the ones roaming, doing the looting, vandalizing, and sabotaging. We've had so many reports of people at truck stops, et cetera, having their rigs sabotage that are trying to get aid up into these mountains. And also all your people of color are the ones clogging up the emergency rooms and the relief centers. And then you have all your globo homo commie carpetbagger chicken swingers and demon spawn of J.D. Rockefeller philanthropists up here plotting to buy all this distressed property up for pennies on the dollar. That is the dynamics going on here. But if you listen to the propagandists coming out of App State University and their new interim chancellor, Rosa Luxemburg, a.k.a. Heather Norris, who's filling in for Jezebel Everett's disgrace that they finally ran her off. But they're just in this big, you know, excuse my French, but circle jerk of, oh, aren't we doing such a great job of our multicultural, diverse community coming together in time of crisis? Yes, let's take a moment to really celebrate diversity and the LGBT community and the Muslim community of Nubin, and just like this big, you know, kumbaya event. And the locals all know there's nothing further from the truth. It's like they know that they are now scared because you've got roaming bands robbing and looting. I have heard somebody saying one of their generators running was stolen out of their yard. Somebody that brazen came up, you know, and stole the generator out of their yard.
Dude, I grew up, you and I are the same age basically. Yeah. And I remember some hurricanes and stuff in Florida. And I remember, you know, Atlanta, you know, the Georgia, that southwest area or southeast area. And I remember the governors coming out with any looter, shoot to kill. They were shooting to kill orders back in the day. And you know, that needs to be brought back in white communities. Screw you. You come into our towns, it's a shoot to kill zone. You do not come into our area. You go just loot from I don't know, the packy down the street, but you're not going to loot in our area. It's shoot to kill.
I remember that's the way it used to be. That was standard. You know, we do not tolerate looting in the United States of America. You know, anybody, that is just not done here.
Especially when people are in need, because that's like adding insult to injury. It's so unfair to people. They're already down, and then you want to kick further.
Right. And that's the demoralizing psychological warfare of this type of, you know, operation is, you know, you demoralize the people by saying the authorities don't care about you, you're on your own, and if you try to defend yourself, you're going to be the one punished. This is that Marxist thing of punish the victim. And, you know, we've got some actual sheriffs here that still are doing their jobs, that are not only encouraging militia formation and they're deputizing relief workers, but are actually threatening to, you know, run the FEMA folks and the feds out or arrest them if they don't stop hindering relief efforts. And so the sheriffs, you know, in some of these counties, others, you've got these, you know, they were bought up by these carpetbagger Jews. They're the progressive sheriffs that have been trained at Appalachian State University on how to do law enforcement in a diverse multicultural environment, and the local white people that resist, they're enemy number one. That's how so many of these new sheriffs and law enforcement are being trained, just like they were in the UK, just like they were in France. You know, your children are being raped and murdered, and if you say anything about it, you're being arrested and taken away because you're intolerant and racist, and that's how the police are weaponized. Just like Trotsky said, governments come and go, but the police remain. They're just there to enforce the law. Whoever makes the law, that's what they're going to enforce. And if they're going to enforce diversity, DEI, then that's what they're going to do. And white people are on their own. Your law enforcement has forsaken you. Yeah.
So anyways, it's a good red pill event. People need to get the story out. The lithium angle needs to be very fleshed out, because then we can show with the weather modification that this is literally a play on property. This is, you know, these events are very expensive to roll out. FEMA, to roll out these agencies isn't cheap. Somebody's still got to pay for it. So there's got to be some profit motive on the other side. And certainly controlling the lithium assets in a world where we're supposed to all go to EV cars and the lithium batteries, this is a big play, and something certainly to be looked into. So what do you think?
Oh, definitely. It's like we need to do forensic analysis of that weather pattern. especially anybody who has spectral data about any evidence of any type of dew or microwave laser being introduced to add energy to the system. What planes were in the air the week before that might have been spraying chemicals for this operation, research Operation Popeye, and see how much it, you know, goes to that type of technology. We need to look at every person that's buying land in Western North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee, et cetera, who benefits from the storm. Who's going to be buying up all this land? Is it the corporation mining interests, or is it the NGO philanthropists? But, you know, this was a land grab operation to destroy this section. So, you know, that's going to be the forensic evidence that we're going to need. So we got a lot of people going to be looking at this, what happens from here, and, you know, who had the motive, who had the means, who had the opportunity, and who benefits. And don't underplay the election thing. Is that, you know, they always had this thing of it's got to be done legally, you know, as we wage this warfare. And so the idea of, well, dead people only vote Democrat. So if we kill all those white conservatives, then, yeah, they'll be on the rolls and they can vote Democrat in this election in the swing states, especially here in North Carolina. That North Carolina is one of the big battlegrounds and one of the strongholds of Heritage Appalachia, you know, Tar Heel state stock, you know, North Kakalaki is up here in these mountains. The rest of the state has already been completely turned into blue, especially around Charlotte. Charlotte's your Jewish banking industry down there, syndicate, and your trucking industry. Raleigh is the capital city, Wake County. You got all the, you know, universities in that area, completely Jewish control. Wilmington, completely Jewish control. Asheville was completely Jewish control. That was the blue dot in the mountains up there. So, you know, this is going to sway the elections in this area, mainly because there's, you know, some of these people, the town is no longer there. How can you vote if there's not a board of elections standing anymore in that county? And so this way is swinging this vote. You know, they're desperate to, you know, get, you know, keep Trump out of the White House. You know, you and I both got serious reservations about Donald Trump, but at the same time, you know, imagine what's going to happen if we have four more years of Kamala Harris and that Obama, Clinton, Globo Homos, you know, Jeffrey Epstein clique, that, you know, what is it, a rootless clique of cosmopolitans, Satan worshiping demons. You know, if they get four more powers of the executive branch and all these local elections to go blue, it's going to be really bad for the Heritage Stock America. And, you know, we might be, you know, we are definitely looking at an existential event worldwide of, you know, white people are under attack worldwide, and diversity is the weapon, and carpetbaggers with lots of money are the enemy, right? So, you know, that's kind of where I see this going.
I got one final clip and probably going to close this out with that. Okay. But what's changed since 20 years is social media, and people are able to get their own story out. Here's a little clip coming out of Western North Carolina.
Picked up a flight of pediatric medical supplies that were brought in and are going to North Asheville. We were sitting in the private portion of the airport, and we got to overhear an awful lot. The Army pilots, the Navy pilots, hospital representatives, there was a lot of chatter. While we were there, a private jet landed and four FEMA representatives got off. Four people off of a private jet. Come to find out, and you're not gonna hear this, so let me tell you. Come to find out, Mission Hospital was told, a private hospital, that they are going to go ahead and be the morgue center for body recovery. All of the Army Chinook helicopters you're seeing flying overhead, they are doing body recovery. FEMA said, and you can take this as a direct quote, said that they are too tied up at the border to send any more representatives. Yeah, at the border. So anyhow, I guess border control trumps whatever's going on here. So they told Mission Hospital they are not sending refrigerated trucks so that they can stack the bodies up. And we also overheard that whatever fatality numbers you are hearing, and this is a quote, go ahead and add a couple of zeros. So FEMA is busy with the border. A private hospital and the Army are going to take over body recovery, and private individuals, their private helicopters, their private planes are the ones flying in eyes. I was at 10, I was picking up 5.